Hello?
Christ is risen, Linda.
He is Lord. Oh, that reminds me, I gotta call, like, my whole family, because they like Jesus.
Wait, what was that response? You responded, she is Lord?
I said he is Lord.
You're supposed to respond, he is risen indeed.
Am I? What kind of church did you go to?
It's a Lutheran church is what I went to. But you do that in Catholicism, you do that everywhere. Your greeting is, Christ is risen, and you say, he is risen indeed. And then optionally, we both say, Alleluia, we high five, we chest bump, and we go about our Easter.
Well, okay, so in my Easter times, my father was the pastor, and he was the music pastor. And every Easter and every Christmas, he created an Easter cantata.
Oh, yeah. You gotta make a cantata, Linda.
Cantata.
Linda's papa cantata.
My papa's cantata. And each one was different. And my dad was like, I do get my like goofy sense of humor from my dad.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yes. And he, like him and my grandma, my mom's mom and my dad, I think is where my funny comes from. But anyway,
I think it comes from your skewed perspective and your messed up brain, Linda.
Probably. But he would make these crazy cantatas that were like based on recent cultural events and films. And
no way.
Like one time he did a Castaway Christmas. And one time he did like a Groundhog Day type thing. And what were some other cool dad spin-offs? I think there was like a Gilligan's Island take.
I'm just picturing the Matrix Easter cantata in, you know, 1998 or whatever, when Matrix is on everyone's mind.
Yeah, and it was always like he would take the protagonists from those films and like he'd put them in that setting and have them be that person, but then something would happen where there was always like a spiritual event would happen where they would see Jesus in the manger and like they would like come to terms with their old ways and want to be better and they would follow Christ, and so he'd somehow find a way to like mix in the like old timey like Jesus in a manger stuff, or like for Easter like the Jesus on a cross and like the palms on Palm Sunday, whatever, and he would mix all that stuff in to the storyline of the movie that he was ripping off.
Some real big VeggieTales vibes. We got some Larry Boy shit going on in your dad's cantatas.
Yeah, and this was all like at a 100-person church. So it wasn't like he had a big budget either.
Dude, I respect the hustle. I appreciate anybody out there making some creative work. I think that's cool.
Yeah, so every Easter and every Christmas, my dad would be like insanely busy for the entire month before. And he'd be like working away in his office and then going to rehearsals and stuff. And my mom would make all the costumes. And so, yeah, there was nothing like traditional about our services, except for that the like head pastor would get up and he would like tell a story about how he was in the military and he wouldn't drink alcohol and everyone shunned him for it. It was like the same shit every year from that guy. But
that's a lot to unpack, Linda.
There's a lot going on Easter that I don't even have to think about anymore. Mark and I just played tennis, and now I'm driving to the beach.
Yeah, so. I was talking earlier today with some friends about how when I moved away from home for college, I just immediately completely disengaged from anything related to religion at all, and I just completely forgot it existed. And it was like a pretty big fixture of my life, both when I was younger because I went to church all the time, and then when I was older because I felt like a big part of my identity in high school in my family was intentionally rubbing up against that and like being the contrarian, and like it was something I thought about a lot because I was always having both real and fake arguments with people and arguments in my head about this dumb religious shit, and then it just evaporated. I went to college and I just wasn't even aware of it anymore. And then like my mother calls on Easter and I'm like, right, Easter, totally. Yeah, that's a thing, I guess, still. Like nobody in my social circle was even like an iota religious anymore. And I was just like, oh, this is a much better life. This is way better for me. Yeah. I like this a lot more.
Today, I took Mark to a CVS in like deep in Queens or somewhere. so that he could get his vaccine. And it was when we were sitting and waiting to make sure that he didn't have any adverse side effects, that we noticed all the Easter shit on the shelves. And he goes, oh yeah, happy Easter. And that was it.
I got my first vaccine on Saturday, which has been very fun and exciting. I'm very happy about it.
Did you have the Moderna, the Pfizer?
Oh, I'm Pfizer. Let's just go through my entire medical history here. Let me read out all my details.
Cool.
I got the Pfizer. It's funny, I didn't even know, like, I just, you know, managed to get an appointment, and I had no idea what the appointment was for. It was just for a vaccine. I didn't know until I arrived which one it was going to be. But yeah. I actually got the same appointment time as a couple other people that were looking for appointments because some, like, you know, free slots opened up, and I told the other people I knew were looking for appointments. We all got the same, like, block, and so I was waiting in line with them, and I was saying that, you know, it's seeing the scene now. This is at the Baltimore Convention Center, which is, like, they set up a field hospital in the convention center in Baltimore, the entire convention center is turned into, like, a vaccination and testing site, and it's this big operation. It's really well run, too. And I was saying, as we're in this big line waiting to get into this big center, and there's, like, you know, all of these barriers and, you know, people kind of directing people, and I was like, you know, this is, like, right now this gives me so much hope, right? Because we've come from a year of just bullshit, nonsense, and the state failing us in every possible way. And here, at least, you know, we can throw all the criticisms we want at this way this, you know, rollout has been and whatever. But here are people getting vaccinated, and here is the system ostensibly doing its job, albeit late and whatever. And I was like, it was such a scene of hope. Like, I felt really, like, good and hopeful seeing it happen. And, like, bumping into other people I knew at the convention center. And then I was sitting there and I was like, you know what, though? If you had, like, screenshotted this scene, like, taken a brief video of this back and shown it to me in January of 2020, I would have been like, holy fuck, what a bleak-ass dystopian, like, is that really what's going to happen? Like, we're all going to be wearing masks in the convention center, which has turned into a field hospital, and just, like, moving through cow catchers to get a vaccine, and then sitting in this big football field-sized grid of folding chairs that are all 8 feet apart for 15 minutes with other people waiting to make sure nobody croaks or goes into anaphylactic shock. Like, it's just, it's funny how 1 year can totally reset your expectations around what the world is. And now this scene is hopeful, where before it would have been so bleak.
Yeah, and I think that we went through, like, a peak and then a valley of sorts, because when we got to that CVS deep in the heart of Queens or wherever, in the parking lot, there was this little booth that had two, like, it was like glass, like, phone booths. So, like, imagine, like, two glass phone booths on either side of a closed off area. And there was a door to the closed off area. And I was like, what the hell is this thing?
Like an airlock?
And so, and so I went around it and looked. And so in the center, there's, like, a door for basically the physician or whoever to go in. And then, like, those rubber glove thingies that they can stick their arms in, like, the way that you would do to, like, manipulate something in an airlock.
Right, if you were sandblasting something or dealing with, like, radiation or something.
Yeah, and so those rubber glove thingies reaching into either of those glass booths with a chair in each of them. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is, like, already a relic from the days that we had no idea, like, how infectious this thing was, how to deal with it. Just imagining, like, just 6 months or a year ago, like, people going to sit in this little glass booth to have these rubber gloves with a Q-tip prod into their nose so that they could test. And I remember, like, when testing wasn't even available and wasn't even a thing. And I'm like, wow, we have been through a lot.
Because
now,
like, that little
shit, Linda. Because now that little weird glass booth is just, like, you know, some, like, old thing that's in the CVS parking lot that, like, when I looked in it, there was, like, a bunch of, like, boxes stacked in it. So now it's just, like, storage that they're just never going to have to use again. But yeah, holy shit. We've been through, like, the end times and back. And I feel grateful. You know, I felt this way. Mark agreed that he felt this way. Did it feel, maybe because you were in a big stadium, it felt like it had all of the attention that it deserved. But, you know, for us, it was very anticlimactic. It was just
transactional.
Like,
just transactional. Like picking up a prescription or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. It has, like, you know, 10% Children of Men vibes. You know, it's like what I mean. Like, the whole thing has, like, 10 to 15% dystopian movie vibes. And it's just, it's still a little bit surreal that that's reality. That's where we are after a year of this thing. So, but anyway, at least a milestone is in sight. I'm not going to be so audacious as to say any kind of end, but a milestone is definitely in sight. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, go team.
Go team. Yay. Linda, you're driving. You're on the road. We got a road pod.
We got a road pod.
Road pod. Driving. Hitting that road for a road pod.
Yeah, I am driving to Montauk. I am going to hang out by myself for a few nights, which I'm really excited about. Sometimes the world, Andy, it just shows you what you need. And I was on a walk, and I had a vision of myself staring at the beach, and I said, I need that. So I'm driving out to look out and blankly over the ocean with my doggie. I got Lenny in the car. I hear you typing. Ignoring me.
I'm Linda. I am multitasking. Okay, I got an important notification. I dealt with it. You said you needed some space. You're gonna go stand on the beach and look out over the ocean blankly with your dog.
Like,
I'm extremely good at multitasking.
It's all right. You can multitask.
I give you my full attention. I really do. This thing just popped up. I dealt with it, and now you know what? All windows are closed.
I mean, now you have to share with the class. What was it?
Oh, I can't possibly say. I'm just staring at your little waveform now. I'm just going to watch the little waveform of your voice in my GarageBand and just really focus on you, okay?
Okay.
Now, are you going to I personally love going in the ocean off-season. Do you like an off-season ocean swim?
I do not like swimming in the ocean, but whoa. I like being at it. Like, I really loved... This is what I loved about being in the Bay Area. I love an ocean that everyone agrees it would be crazy to go swim in that right now. Like, it's like either like too cold or too rocky. I love the ocean, and I love the pressure being off from having to go and get into it. Because I don't know if I've shared this fact with you, but my grandma has this really awesome picture of me when I was like 3. And at the beach, and I loved building sandcastles, but I was such a picky little asshole, and I hated having sand on my hands, and so she would bring me a bucket of fresh water to dip my hands in every so often while I was building my sandcastle.
And then immediately go back to the sandcastle, no question. Just clean your hands off, and then immediately touch more sand.
I remember it getting to a point where I'm like, okay, that's enough. I need to start fresh.
I do that when I'm cooking, and it feels silly to me. Like, I'll handle some ingredients and be like, ooh, hands dirty, gotta clean them off. And then I'm like, what's the next step? Oh, yeah, handle the ingredients again. Cool, good job, Andy. Great, great, great.
Yeah, but it's also like there's a threshold where you're like, too much shit, gotta get it off. Uncomfortable. Whoa. Man, I hate it when motorcycles do that, when they like zoom past you, because I just, every time I'm like, I'm about to watch this person die, and I don't want to watch someone die today.
Yeah. There's a certain... There's a high correlation of a certain type of personality with a certain type of motorcycle, is all I'll say. In my experience.
Yeah, exactly. Bunch of douchebags.
So there will be no swimming in the ocean. There'll be no slow walk into the waves, you know, as if you were going to just keep walking to the ocean shelf. And but you will just look out over it with your nice fluffy dog. Get them all sandy.
Yeah, I'll probably like make some coffee in the morning and then just like hang out on the beach.
That sounds lovely, Linda.
Yeah, there's like a hike that I'm going to do. There's a lot of parks out in Montauk. It's very chill. It's very like... I don't know. There's not a lot of commercial stuff going on out there.
That's nice.
Andy, quit multitasking.
I'm not. I'm listening to you. You weren't saying anything interesting. Get the fuck over it. What am I supposed to respond to? Yeah, sure. It sounds great. Cool beach.
Cool beach, asshole.
No, I'm very excited for you. I'm excited you're taking some space. Do you feel like you have... I know you were... expressing last time we talked that you are kind of in this place where you're supposed to like hurry up and relax and like reset, but you were feeling pressured to do that and were wondering if you'd even be able to get to a place where you would reset. Is this beach trip, I assume, on theme? You're basically going to the beach to try and get even more distance, try and press that reset button a little harder.
Yes, and I feel a lot better than I did a few days ago in terms of all that stuff. Like, I actually feel excited about my job now. Like, some things happened, like some stuff arrived at my house to get me prepared for said job, and...
Your welcome packet.
So yeah, a little welcome packet, a little monitor for my computer. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like, all right, I think I just need a couple days to just totally chill, and then I'll be good to go. So thank you for coming with me on this journey of, like, really, you know, loathing capitalism and hating the ways that we request so much of ourselves.
Burn ourselves down to the end.
Yeah. So now I'm starting to see it as, like, a whole bunch of new beginnings, and, like, I had to summarize it because I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to do the whole, like, Twitter thing where I announce the change, but I
can do it for you if you want. I can, you know, write a nice post about how
that would be great.
You're ending your journey's coming to an end at Help Scout, but it's been a glorious trip, and you're grateful for everybody you've met along the way and how much you've grown, and it's time for the next chapter. And the next chapter is a different internet company that makes a different internet product for internet people.
And you'll say, but it would be rude to put those things in the same post, so you have to say...
Oh, yeah, you got to wait like 2 days, really soak up those likes and retweets. Like,
I'm so happy to announce that today is my first day at Webflow, and I'm now doing things here where I wasn't before.
I am now choosing colors and shapes for a different website.
So, yeah, I told a Slack group that I'm in, and I liked the way that I was able to word it with them. I was just like, you know, I left a place, I left things in a good spot, and I'm going to a new place, and I'm excited about it. That's it.
Elegantly put, Linda. Very pragmatic.
Yeah. It just felt, you know, like doing things on my own terms and doing things my own way, and I hate how,
you've earned
like...
it.
How much of a stink I have to make in order to just, like, feel like I have permission to do things my own way. I have to, like, really, like, stand up against the current and be like, I am different.
Why do you feel like you have to make a stink about that? Why do you feel so much pressure to do the, like, Twitter post about the end of one bright journey and the turning over of a new page?
Well, it's not like the Twitter post that I feel pressure about. I guess it's, like, pressure to care a lot.
Sure.
To really, like, be drinking the Kool-Aid. Man, this is some loud motorcycles.
Sounds like you're being attacked by large robot bees.
Yeah, I'm, like, in Star Wars right now.
The bees!
The bees!
Where is that pressure to care coming from, you think? Like... Who wants you to care?
Probably white supremacy. Like, if you want to really get down to the core of it.
No, that's what we always do here on Earth to Linda. That's our motto. Get into the core of it. Since 2019 or whenever we started doing this thing.
But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think with a lot of these companies and things, like, there is like an underlying pressure to wear the letter jacket. Or, you know, to be, like, on a team. Like, I am playing for this team. And, yeah. And to feel like, well, I mean, obviously, like, I chose to be on this team, so I do care.
Really, here at Webflow, it's more of a family. We like to think of it more like a family, and you're part of the family now.
Don't make fun of my new company. You're going to get me in trouble.
It's just me. Webflow, Linda loves you. I'm the sardonic asshole.
Yeah. But I think that, like, people who have been through it a few times maybe just understand what it's like to, like, lose some of your identity in transferring to these companies and being like, wait, I want to still be me, though. So actually, I'm listening to this podcast that I love that I sent to you.
I haven't gotten to listen to it yet, but tell me about it.
Yeah, Connor Ratliff is he's one of my favorite UCB comedians. He's in this troupe called The Stepfathers, which has been around forever, and he's just like, he's one of those people where every time he opens his mouth, you're laughing. He's so funny. And so when I saw that he had this podcast, I was really excited because, like, every time he was performing at UCB, I was like, oh yes, like it's like a night where he's on. And so I started listening to his podcast, and the whole premise is just that like 20 years ago, he was fired by Tom Hanks for a very minor role in the TV series Band of Brothers. And he's unpacking it like one would unpack a mystery in like Serial. But it's just great because it's just like this one moment in this one comedian's career that like really fucked up his confidence. And he's since totally healed from it. So much time has passed, but he's just unpacking the whole thing with other like famous comedians that he's friends with now. And like Jon Hamm is on the second episode and Janet from A Good Place is on the first one. And so, but it's very like poking fun at itself. And one of the big takeaways from his career is like when you're young, you care so much and you want it so much. And that's like exactly the thing that the directors and like the casting directors hate. And
they want people that are cool and aloof, and you can't possibly be cool and aloof when you are so desperate for approval and success.
Right. And so he worked at like the Strand bookstore for 13 years and then got to a point where he was like, okay, I guess I'll try to do some comedy stuff, but I don't want it to be my whole identity. I don't want my whole identity to be hanging on whether I get one part or not, because it just destroys you. And then he like, his career started to pick up a little bit and he actually started to do better and to get some roles that he was really proud of. But it's just, it's a similar thing, I think, in all of our careers, like getting to the place where you feel like you can like approach it with your whole self intact no matter what happens. And like, yeah, like I'm here, we'll see how this goes. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. I guess that's like the place that I am trying to be in getting a new job, is like keeping my me intact and not like going all in so hard this is gonna be the end all be all moment of my career. But yeah, trying to come at it from a healthier place, I guess.
Well, that sounds great, Linda. The podcast you described, have you ever listened to Heavyweight, the Gimlet podcast?
Oh, yes. I think I've listened to it.
The way you described the podcast just now reminded me of Heavyweight, which is that show that, like, kind of, like, semi-ironically, overly seriously, like, dives into things from people's pasts and, like, you know.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah, I'll give that show a try. I have a hard time doing any kind of self-serious produced podcast. It just, that whole vibe rubs against me in such the wrong way. But I will try this out. It sounds like it might be more
it's
my style.
It's very tongue-in-cheek. I think it knows how stupid it is. And, like, they talk about how stupid and unimportant it is a lot. But just, yeah, try the first episode. I won't have my feelings hurt if you don't like it.
Linda, for you, I'll try the first two.
Oh, thank you.
I know.
Gotta get to that John Hamm episode. You know, that was big.
I love me some Hamm Hog. That guy's great.
He really is.
That is the person I'm most favorably sometimes compared to looks wise. Sometimes I get the you look a little bit like John Hamm.
Damn.
Which I think is extremely generous. a little bit too generous.
So who's your January Jones? Is that Hillary?
Who's my what?
January Jones.
I've never seen the show. I don't know anything about it. I assume that's a character from the show. I've never watched it.
Yeah, and I'm Peggy.
Who's Peggy? Tell me what Peggy's deal is. Is she the jokester?
Don't worry about
she
it.
She the no. funny the funny joke cracker?
No, but I do identify with her character a lot. She's just like the only woman at the ad agency.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
So, yeah. Like, the only woman who's not, like, a secretary.
Well, as we know, Linda, you love to be the only woman at the table. Your whole career is just to get at that table.
Yeah, give me that table. Anyway, so I don't want to bitch about capitalism today or any of that stuff.
Let's not.
I just want to see how you're doing. I also want to say that I played tennis today, and it felt so good.
Yeah? I didn't know you were a tennis player.
I cannot remember the last time I had a tennis racket in my hands. It was, like, maybe high school.
But did you, like, play in high school? Like, were you any good? Like, you had on a team or practice? Or you mean you just used to fuck around with the tennis racket?
Yeah, just used to fuck around with the tennis racket every now and then. And, like, so, you know, in New York, there are just parks all around you all the time. And Mark and I, just on a whim, got some tennis rackets a few weeks ago.
I can't believe you can find an empty court.
Yeah. So we didn't have a full court. We had one of those, like, half courts has a wall.
With a wall,
so
yeah.
Just, like, play against the wall, which was perfect because we hit it over the wall like 1,000 times and kept apologizing to the people on the other side. And I kept telling Mark, like, I loved how equally bad at it we are. Because I didn't feel like I was, like, yeah, I felt like we were both good enough that we could, like, you know, move quickly and get the ball, like, roughly where we wanted to, but we're bad enough that, like, occasionally it just goes way, way wrong.
Yeah, it'd be a little embarrassing if Mark was, like, you know, mopping the floor with you. You wouldn't be having fun. He probably wouldn't be having fun. He'd be annoyed, probably. So,
right, exactly.
There are so many games that I feel like hinge upon being at exactly the right skill level and interest level as the person you're playing with. I have very fond memories of times in my life where I found games and a person to play the game with where we were on such an equal, coming from the same place, right? Both in terms of skill or experience or interest, and you just hit that sweet spot and it's like you never want to stop playing. It works perfectly. You don't have any of that weird tension when there's that delta in interest.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, if I were to play basketball with anyone, they would hate me, and I'd just take myself out of the game. That's what I do when I play Frisbee. I'm so bad at Frisbee, Andy.
You're bad at throwing a bee?
I'm bad at throwing stuff.
You never played Ultimate, Linda?
No. Like, I am really bad at it, and it makes me feel bad to the point that I just sit down and I say, you guys, I'm not... Don't worry.
That's funny, because you're pretty athletic, I feel like, overall. Why is it throwing stuff you struggle with, you think?
I think that with, and I noticed this now that I'm like a grown up, I'm like, oh, I see what's happening here. I'm, maybe I've never explained this on the podcast either, but that I'm hypermobile. Like, I have, some people call it double jointed. Obviously, you don't have two joints. You just, all of the ligaments in my body are way stretchier than they should be.
So you're saying you go to throw a frisbee and you just turn to jelly and kind of like slap it around for a bit?
Well, so my wrists can, like, fold almost all the way back. Like, my shoulders can, like, they dislocate all the time.
you're just, like, you're a barely connected pile of bones that's moving through the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and so if the muscles aren't built up between all these joints, then, like, things just hyperextend constantly. So, like, when I was playing tennis today, I realized, like, oh, my wrist is just flopping backwards. So, like, the tennis racket is being pointed up way too much, and that's why it keeps going over the wall. So I can see, like, okay, so I would need to work on, like, these muscles and this movement. But, yeah, with Frisbees, like, I just, oh, my God, I never release it at the right time. It goes way
That's kind of the main thing about throwing a Frisbee. It's, like, the one thing, because, exactly. You know, get it level and release it at the right time.
Yeah, but the weird thing is that I was so good at kicking that in the eighth grade, I won the school-wide field goal competition.
I love this story so much already.
I know.
I just love any story that starts with, I was so good at kicking, I won the school-wide kicking competition. I kicked so good.
So good. I kicked so good. Like, I kicked with incredible accuracy. Like, all of the accuracy that I lacked in my hand-eye coordination, I made up for with my foot skills. So I would
Very interesting array of skills and weaknesses you have here, Linda.
I know. So, like, in PE, they would call me over. Like, I didn't like to play football, but they would call me over.
Hey, get the horse over. Get that kicking girl over here.
Get the kicker. And they, like, the coaches taught me how to punch a spiral so I could do that really nicely. And,
yeah. Did you ever play soccer?
Really good at kicking stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you really good at that? Were you your kicking skills on display?
So I think that the problem with soccer is that I didn't care enough to be good at it. So, like, on the field, I was, like, I was defense. I was a little out of shape.
I also played defense, Linda.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so I was really good at, like, defending the goal and kicking the ball to, like, the right person. But then, like, I would get way too freaked out to ever, like, score a goal. Like, I think I scored, like, 2 goals in my whole life.
I'm going to go back and cut out that oh wow you responded with that was so faked when I said I also played defense. That was the fakest ass oh wow I've ever heard in my entire
Andy,
life.
I am currently talking at length about my kicking skills. If you could just hold off.
That's what this show
is about.
Were you
the right side of the field? Left side? Where were you, like, the what's it called?
I was usually the sweeper. Center defense.
Yeah.
And, I like having the whole everything going on in front of me, you know? I don't like having stuff behind me I'm not responsible for. It makes me anxious. Whenever I played offense, I'd always run back too far, and they'd be like, stay up there, it's not your job. And I was like, but I have to help.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a cop behind me. Ooh, Andy.
Oh, if you get pulled over, that'd be hilarious. That'd be a great episode. Oh,
they're getting behind me. Oh, my God.
Are you speeding? Now, do you speed when you drive?
I was going, like, 15 over. Okay, they just got over again, so I'm just gonna shit my pants. They got off the exit. Woo!
How many times have you been pulled over in your entire life?
Twice.
I have never once been pulled over. It's a point of pride for me. I was in the car once when a friend of mine got pulled over, and it was a very funny thing. It was we were in high school, and we were driving down to my buddy's parents' house in Florida, all the way from, you know, the Philadelphia area. So a really long drive. And the reason we were doing that is because when you are, you know, 17 or 18 years old, you cannot rent a car in Florida. They just won't let you. You have to be like 23 or whatever. And so
you
can't get around Florida without a car. It's impossible. It is not a state built for any kind of other locomotion. So we had to drive all the way down just so we had a car in Florida that we could drive around. And we did it all in one shot and took shifts, and I drove the first shift, and this is, to this day, probably one of the dumbest things I've ever done in my entire life, but we left at like 10 p.m. from Philadelphia, and you drive almost the entire time on I-95, which is a big interstate. You may have been on it in the Northeast Corridor, a whole East Coast, really, and left at like 10, and so by like midnight, 1 a.m., we had passed Richmond on 95, and south of Richmond on 95, there is basically nothing for a very, very long time. I mean, really small cities and stuff, tiny little towns, but there's nothing of any note, and the road is just dead straight, and you can see forever, and there's no one on the road, and so we just went as fast as the car would go for like 4.5 hours, you know, and as fast as this particular car would go was like 114. We just went 114 for like 3.5-4 hours because there was nothing around. Still incredibly stupid, right? Because like if a tire had blown out or if a deer had appeared out of nowhere, like it would have been just immediate destruction of all things. Incredibly dumb. But I drove my entire night, you know, speeding completely egregiously, and made it fine. Handed it off to the next driver, and this guy was driving through Georgia in like the morning, and he was speeding a little bit, but at this point there was more cars around. He's maybe going 10 or 15 over, and we get pulled over, and this is my buddy who he was notorious for like thinking he was slick and having this like big like macho attitude about being able to talk his way out of anything. And so we get pulled over and we're all sitting in the car and we're like, you idiot. Also, I shouldn't say that. There was reasons we were also concerned about other stuff, but we get pulled over and this guy's like, all right, watch me get out of this, guys. This is gonna be great. I'm gonna like make this so easy. I'm gonna talk our way right out of this thing. And as soon as the police officer gets up to the car window, my buddy just like crumbles and starts like shaking and going like, oh, whatever you want, officer, and like totally did nothing slick at all, and just like, you know, took a ticket and apologized profusely, and the cop goes back to his car and we're like, it's nice job, buddy. You didn't do a very good job talking your way out of that one. It was it was very funny though. I still remember getting pulled over.
Well, that's the thing, is that police, like, I start shaking. Actually, I take it back. I've been pulled over 3 times. So one time, I was speeding in Alabama, got a ticket. I was 18. And then the second time was when, it was only a couple years ago, and it was in Brooklyn, and it was so stupid. It was like, I went over, like, a dotted line, like, right when it turned solid again. And so,
Illegal passing.
Yeah, technically, whatever. And... Well, I mean, and I'm not even going to explain it. It was just one of those things where you're like, the cop happened to be right there.
Right, they got you on technicality.
Ticket. Right. And I kind of rolled my eyes, was like, whatever. And then the third time, Mark and I were on a road trip going from Arizona up to Utah, and this cop pulled me over, and I was like, you know, maybe going 10, 15 over or something, and then he was just like, all right, have a good day, and no ticket. But each of those times, just shaking. Like, cops in this country do not make you feel safe and protected.
No.
Just fucking so shaky and, like, what is going to happen? Like, what do I say? And, like, sweating. And, like, it's going to be fine. Just keep cool. terrified.
Right, and that's as right. like a privileged white person, right? And still,
yeah,
there's totally justified fear of the police. Absolutely.
I know. One of my earliest memories is my mom getting pulled over and crying. I was like in a car seat, and it's like
you
for
remember
some reason,
being
guess,
in a car seat.
Yeah, it's one of my earliest memories.
Wow.
And yeah, and I just remember like this guy coming up to the window, giving her a ticket, and then her crying because like we couldn't afford it or something. Like it was, and I, you know, like I was also just listening to a podcast about memory, so it's like I know that I'm not actually like playing the moment back, but I'm like,
yeah, you're replaying
that
you're telling yourself you remember it. Yeah, yeah, like many layers of remembering the memory.
Right. And then my parents were like proud of me for remembering it. So when I'm like 5 and 6, they're like, do you remember the time
right.
like mommy got
yeah.
pulled over? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, there are cops hiding in the woods right now. I just saw another one sneaking behind the trees.
It's gotta imprint on you when you're that young to see some other person make your parent cry. That's gotta be like, I'm
right.
not sure I've ever seen that.
Right.
And like, still to this day, like, some other person directly make one of my parents cry. I don't think it's ever happened.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the time that I got community service because I... What was the ticket for? It was for disorderly conduct.
No, I must hear about this right now.
Okay, so I was in art school, and I didn't live on campus, so I had to drive 30 minutes to MARTA. And then MARTA was like the mass transit train thing in Atlanta.
And this is because you were living at home still, right? Because your parents didn't want
yeah.
you doing any college hanky-panky.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to drive to the MARTA station and then take MARTA for like another 30 minutes to my school. And so back then they were still using tokens. So I like had my portfolio and all my stuff with me, and I had my tokens, and I put it in the slot at the turnstile, like, 6 times, and then I finally, like, I heard the train coming, and it kept spitting the token out, spitting it out, spitting it out, spitting it out, and so I just took it, and then I hopped over the turnstile, and I, like, ran down, missed the train, I'm standing there like, fuck, another one doesn't come for, like, 30 or 45 minutes, because Atlanta, and this, like, brand new cop approaches me, and he was, like, he was nervous. And it seemed like it was like legitimately his first day, and he was just like, oh, I couldn't help but notice you avoided paying the fare up there. And I was just like, and I tried to explain to him, I was like, yeah, but I tried to put the token in, like, I seriously, I stood there and I showed him the token, I was like, here, take the token, like. And he said, I'm sorry, but...
Sorry, now you're bribing a police officer, and that's also against
the law. But you avoided the fare, and so he pulls out his pad to write me a citation. And I'm, like, shaking, and then he, like, reaches for his pen, and he doesn't have one. And I had one in my pocket, and so I handed him a pen to write me my own ticket.
You gave him, like, an art school, you know, like, you know, felt
tip. Like a Micron
pen.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was, like, mortified because, again, I had no money and, like, my parents would have freaking killed me. And I think my grandparents were visiting or something because, like, I remember, like, sitting through this whole dinner when I got home, like, with my face just, like, bright red, like I had done something terribly, terribly wrong. And I was going to get in so much trouble when I told them because I was like, I have no idea how I'm going to pay this, like, whatever
it is. Do you remember how much the fine was for, out of curiosity?
It was probably like $200 or $300, but it was like
a
court date. Like, yeah. And the thing is, it was like a court date. So I had to go to the court date.
Right.
Because it was disorderly conduct, which could be fucking anything. You know, it could be like, taking your pants off and like running around.
Right.
Like,
is that what turnstile jumping normally is? Like, I thought for sure this story was going to be like, and then the cop came up to me and then I went ballistic and threw all my art all over the train tracks and started screaming.
Yeah.
But no, this was just disorderly conduct for jumping a turnstile.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
And so, so I went to my court date, and I think that like either my mom or my dad went with me. And I was like, they were actually really cool about it. Like, I explained the whole story, and like, they're kind of like, well, this is weird. And just like, they wanted
so then,
to like try to find
I gave
a
him
way
my pen because
like,
he didn't have a pen. And
because he sucks at his job. And I wanted to, like, prove that, like, the turnstile was broken. So I think I even, like, went and, like, took a picture of it. And, like, because I was so, Andy, like, I was 18 at this point in my life. And this is, like, the worst thing that's ever happened to
me. Of course.
And so I, like, when I'm in there, this is my first real experience with being in a courtroom. And, like, for, like, minor charges like these. And so it was, like, person after person was going up for, like, small marijuana charges. So they would say, like, under however many ounces, and then, like, how do we, whatever, how do we, what do you even say, like, find the person guilty, whatever. But for all of these, the police officer wasn't there. And so I just saw these people getting let off, like, left and right. They were, like, officer not present, okay, you're dismissed. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna be good. Like, I'm sure that the cop isn't here. I didn't see him anywhere. And so then it was like my turn to stand up in front of the judge, and she like asked how I wanted to plead, guilty or not guilty. And I said, well, not guilty. And then she was like, I forget like how it even went, but basically it was just like, you don't have a choice. Like, we're finding you guilty because like it's their word over yours. And like, to get this removed from your record, you have to do like 50 hours of community service.
Wow.
And so I was just like, oh my God. Okay. Like whatever it takes to get it off my record, you know? Cause it looks like it could be anything. And at this point, like I had still working in like restaurants and
Right.
And so, and that like would have made a big difference because they do background checks at restaurants and things, and like it would have been a big deal. So I got my community service stuff, and it was for like, I don't know, for like a month. I every Saturday and Sunday, like all day long, I had to do a whole like 14-hour shift at the Goodwill. And it was really interesting, and it's actually like an experience that I'm really grateful for, because I think it was one of the first times that like my eyes were really open to my own white privilege, you know, because I was 18, like fresh out of my like safe environment in school. And I actually met this woman who I ended up working with at a restaurant later in life in my community service. And it was just so weird and different. And like this was in Atlanta, Andy, so at Goodwill, like what I had to do was like sort all of the donations.
Right.
And on my first day, for some reason, all of the donations were like stripper clothes. And it was like,
wow.
Like thongs and little bikini things and the shoes with like the crazy platforms, and they were like so sweaty and dirty. And so me and this like other person who was in community service like bonded over just kind of like laughing at these shoes, and like, cause they were like really fun and like fun, weird costumes. But anyways, and then like an old lady there by the end of my, like the last half of my time doing this community service, this older lady like took me under her wing, cause she's like, oh, you got a creative eye. And so she like had me make the display cases at the like front of the Goodwill store.
I love this story, Linda. I love everything about this story so much.
And make it look nice. And so so I think it was like I was devastated, but then I made the most of it. And I also saw like, wait a minute, there are people in here doing this, and it's kind of like routine for them. Like you could tell that they had been there like for a long time, or they'd been there before. And like, yeah, it really did just start to kind of open my eyes up to this whole other world, which we now obviously know, like America is like a horrible and racist place that normally white people like me don't have to see that other side. And it's fucked up, but I'm glad that I had that glimpse of it when I did.
One of my favorite parts about this story is that in a roundabout way, your parents trying to shelter you and keep you at home while you were in college resulted in you having to sort through a bunch of used thongs at the from strippers at the Goodwill. Because you wouldn't have been taking the train, and you wouldn't have jumped the turnstile, and you wouldn't have got the ticket, and you wouldn't have got the community service if they had just let you go to college. And then here you are.
Oh, my God. Andy, and if that isn't, like, the story of my whole life, like, this would be a whole nother podcast. But, like, my mom wouldn't let me participate in, like, normal activities at school because she wanted me to learn about like hard work. So I would come with her to like the places that she did bookkeeping for, and I would have these small jobs at these places. And so instead of getting like the school experience, I was instead with these people who were like twice my age. And like, some of the guys that I was around, like one of them like managed like the pornography store across the street, and they would all like make like gross passing comments at me when I was like 14, and
ugh,
just horrendous. And so, yeah. So like by sheltering me from,
she was like, I don't want you going to play lacrosse and talking about boys at the high school. Plus all your ligaments are weird. You probably can't play lacrosse anyway. So you're coming down to get harassed by middle-aged men.
Yeah, exactly.
In the real world.
Exactly. Exactly. And, the irony, but.
Well, anyway, but you came out great, Linda. So it all worked out in the end.
Thank you. Yeah. I haven't had to go to court since then.
I've only ever been to court for a traffic court thing for a parking ticket. I'll tell that story later, though. It's not that exciting.
Yeah, okay. I don't even know how long we've been talking.
46 like minutes and 10 seconds.
Damn! Time flies when you're driving to Montauk.
Time flies when you're driving to Montauk and roasting your friend for responding to one little message once at the beginning of the podcast when I otherwise pay full attention to you.
I'm sorry, I could just tell. I mean,
you
I
can
do
roast me all you want.
You hear me zone out constantly, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's on brand for you, though.
Yeah, exactly. Andy has to be alert all the time. Hey, wait, real quick, when are you coming out with another episode of Andy and Matt talk about Joe Parra talks with you?
That's a good question. We have one recorded already that I think Matt just has to edit. The bottleneck is Matt's editing time, so.
Ah, gotcha.
I guess you have to bug Matt about it.
All right, cool. Well, your listeners are waiting.
All right.
I can't wait.
I will let him know that our biggest fan is waiting for a new episode. And by biggest fan, you've listened to one episode, and I think you didn't have anything particularly nice to say about it. I remember specifically.
I loved it.
I remember in our text message, you texted me. We were talking about something else, and then you were like, "Oh, by the way, listen to the episode of that show." And I was like, "Oh, cool. Which one?" And you said which one, and then you didn't say anything about it. You didn't say like, "And I liked it, and it was good," or you just said, "I listened to it," and I was like, "Okay, cool." And then we talked about something else.
I suck. This is the thing I need to work on, because what I thought I said was how much I liked it and how much I wanted to be on it with you because of how much I liked it. And I even made Mark listen to it. So me and Mark listened to it together, and I listened a second time.
Let me see if I can find what you said, because it was very funny to me. Here we go.
Cool podcast, asshole.
You said, "We listened to your episode of Joe Parra Podcast Time with Matt." That was a bad sentence. I said, "Which episode?" You said, "The latest one." And then you said nothing else, and a little while later, I responded about some other subject. So,
because that was just me telling you that me and Mark listened to it. But it was way back when I told you that I listened to it.
Oh, I
wanted
remember
to
that.
Be on it.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Linda, I'm
anyway,
overly sensitive.
Great
don't
job.
Don't take this as a reflection on you. Take this as a reflection on my fragile
You're
sense
both
of self worth.
There's a lot going on in the world right now.
There's a lot to be sensitive about.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a great Easter.
Crisis risen indeed. Enjoy your drive. Drive
Crisis
safe.
Risen.
And then if you want to chat in your drive home too, maybe a post Montauk. I don't
Ooh,
know. I'll be around. We could do a follow up to and from.
Yeah.
This episode's definitely going to have to be called Linda's Papa Easter Cantata, because it's just Linda's Papa's Easter Cantatas. Yeah, that's going to be that's what
Real
I got to
mouthful.
All right, Linda.
Bye, bud.
Bye-bye.